This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 475, brought to you by Scribd.com and iFanboy listeners like you. Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 475. I am Josh Flanagan, and with me today is my guest co-host, Jim Viscardi.
Hello.
Of comicbook.com.
That's right.
Connor is, you know, the thing about having jobs is sometimes you have to go to them instead of doing this when this is no longer your job, I guess.
I worked in my pajamas today. It was great. Yeah.
You haven't worked from home for that long. Eventually, you'll be like, yeah, I think I need to put clothes on.
Yeah, no, we've got an office. Tennessee got slammed with, get ready, 3 inches of snow, and the entire state shut down.
All hell broke loose. What's funny is that I am in my basement, which has become my, you know, since the extra children showed up, that's become my studio. And I'm just like, there's 3 feet of snow outside now that's been there for a couple of months. Pretty soon, that 3 inches, at least 3 inches of water is just going to be down here. And then I'm going to have to find somewhere else to record. I actually thought that. And then I'm going to have to find somewhere else to record because that is the level of my commitment. We are iFanboy. We like comic books. Every week we read a stack of comics. One of us picks the best comic book they read that week, their favorite. We call it the pick of the week. We will talk about that book. We will talk about other books and some stuff. We're going to do some blister mail and hopefully some shits and giggles. That's what I'm saying. Your spoiler warning is that this is a review show, so we're going to talk about them. There may be some spoilers. That's on you. This week I had the pick. I don't normally like to give the guest the work stuff.
Why don't I get the pick?
We've never done that. I thought about it, and then I literally thought, you know, if I do that without asking Connor, he's going to get mad at me. He's a man who likes tradition. We've never done that before, but this new two-man format, who knows? Who knows? So I have the pick, and I had it last week, and I have it again, so you all have to deal with it.
So you get it 2 weeks in a row, and you don't give it to the guests. Now you're being selfish.
I like how you say it like it's a thing I want.
Now you're being selfish.
You get it. I'm like, I would gladly not have it. That's fine. Pick of the week is Big Man Plans number 1. By Eric Powell.
Well, that's what I would have picked anyway, so.
Would you?
That's what I would have picked anyway.
That's great. Yeah. By Eric Powell.
So look at that. It's like I get it.
And Tim Weish. I guess the story is by the both of them, and the art is by Eric Powell. I don't know who Tim Weish is. This was my big surprise of the week. I
was sort of going through everything, and I saw it, and I thought, oh, that's a new thing from Image. It says 1 of 4. It's by Eric Powell, whose art I like a lot. I've never really been able to get into The Goon, but I've really liked the Billy the Kid book he did and some other things. So he's done stuff that I liked and stuff that I didn't really get into. But I thought, hey, I'll pick this up. And it's dark and grim and very...
Yeah, it is.
It's very funny, though. Am I like, I'm like, did you... It was funny.
Yo, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny. I spoke to him a little bit for Let's Talk Comics, and he was telling me the premise of it sort of beforehand and how he was looking to sort of he likes playing with his sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And when he was describing the book, I'm like, that book is dark. I don't know how you're fitting sense of humor in there. But when I finally read it, I was like, ooh, there it is.
It's okay. So how do I describe this? It's about a dwarf. who had a very rough life. His mother left and his dad died, and then him and his sister were taken off the farm. And then so he was an orphan, and so he got the shit beat out of him his whole time growing up, and eventually he joined an experimental program in the army. This is really just the first couple pages. This is a setup for a larger story that I don't know what the larger story is. For a special program where he basically becomes like a tunnel rat. But he gets trained to be like a special ops covert Navy SEAL level kind of badass soldier. And it's super grim. It's like Garth Ennis mixed with Ed Brubaker, mixed with that sort of weird mind of Eric Powell. And I found myself like a couple of times, like really laughing.
Yeah.
it's just sort of how grim the whole thing was. There's a bit where, you know, he goes into the tunnel and he kills some Viet Cong who are in there, and he starts imagining what they're going to talk to him about, like, or what the VC would go home and tell their kids about, and so that like they'd tell stories to their children about him at night, and like the person would say, and it was a translation because they had written it in, like, maybe it's Vietnamese, I don't know, yeah. But it's like, to bed right now or the tiniest version of death will come for you. He's the tiniest version of death. And there's sex and violence, and he kills a lot of people. He stabs a Nazi in the neck because he's in prison. Like, this book covers a lot of ground.
Yep,
is what I'm getting at. And you know,
there is quite a bit of male nudity, which
is there more than just the one? There's one very like you're on the ground looking up.
Yeah,
his post. Postcoital unit.
Yep.
I read through this and I immediately like had the, I think I texted you. I was like, read, make sure you read this. And then I put it on my Facebook. I was like, this is the treat. And so when it got to the point to make the pick, I was like, this kind of has to be the pick. And the thing is like, this is sort of the first little opening, cold open of his story, and I don't know what this story is going to be because it's his like childhood, and he goes to Vietnam, and then that program ends, so he gets kicked out on the street, and he ends up getting in a bunch of trouble and going to prison, and then that's where our story begins, and that's where the issue ends. I can't wait to read the next one.
It was kind of touching in parts.
It was.
He's getting, you know, beat up or, you know, made fun of as a kid and growing up, where you're just sort of like, you know, even if you weren't a dwarf, there were parts of that, you know, really anyone could sort of relate to in a way.
Sure.
That I was sort of surprised by. But then there's the, like those moments when he's in the tunnels and going after some of the Viet Cong guys, and just the way that Powell worked the lighting and he's got like weird Punisher like face paint on on him, and I'm like, that looks badass.
His necklace has two fingers and an ear.
Yeah. Yep.
So he's a fairly effective killer. He's the Punisher. He's a very tiny Punisher.
Yeah.
I really like the bits where like. He talks about how his, like, there's a lot of inner monologue in this, but it doesn't, he's interesting, so you're kind of cool with it. Where, like, he talks about how his dad is the only person to ever call him Big Man without having any venom to it. This was, I guess, born out of the conversations of the two creators as they talked about they were going to make their Big Man plans. and like it was the phrase that came before the story, I guess, and this came after that. I don't know. I it was just my sort of big surprise of the week. I didn't expect this in any way, and I had a lot of fun with it. And I guess there was a lot of other good books that I read this week, but this was my favorite because I guess it was the most unique of everything, I guess.
It was absolutely stunning.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked great. Like, I don't think I made just, that clear.
It was just gorgeous from top to bottom, I thought the coloring was done particularly well because it set the mood for each scene, and like I said, it was just like flipping through it again, I'm just like, God, every one of these pages is just so pretty.
Yeah. He's a hell of an artist. Like, I've never, yeah. Like, if I said I never got in the goon, it wasn't because I was like, I don't like the art. It wasn't that. I just.
Right.
Yeah. It was a. Thank goodness I sort of accidentally picked this up. It's like, oh, I should, you know, let me check that out. What the heck? I've got the pick of the week. I should give something else a shot. And that usually does not return what I want out of it. But it was good. And, you liked it a lot too, but I'd say if you're out there listening and you kind of like the same kinds of stuff that I do sometimes, then I think that you'll quite dig this.
And if not, take a chance on it.
Yeah, it's $3.50 for God's sakes. It's good comic book art. Can't beat that. Yeah. This is interesting that you are here because you are the person who got me to read number one of the last Hawkeye series. Because you sent it to me when you were still working at Marvel, and you're like, you should read this, you'll like it, because I was not a big Matt Fraction fan at the time. Since then, I've liked a lot of things that he's done. So, it is auspicious then that you would be here for All New Hawkeye number one, written by Jeff Lemire with art by a big favorite of mine, Ramon Perez. What did you think?
Serendipitous. I think we're going from one book with daddy issues to another book with daddy issues. This
I'm pretty sure they're like 90% of the comics put out today. Anyway,
I was gonna say, so Josh, tell me about your daddy issues.
we literally don't have time.
This was an absolute delight. I loved the last Hawkeye series, but I would argue that to me, the Clinton that in the other series was not necessarily Clint, or it wasn't I feel like sometimes it could have been anyone. Mm-hmm. Where the fresh sort of setup in Lemire's book, I know exactly who I'm dealing with, and it just feels right. I thought throughout the story, there's juxtaposition of, him on this mission with Kate at a Hydra base, and there's this undercurrent of a story between him and his brother Barney, with their abusive father, and it was very interesting to see one how the two stories meshed up, and two how Ramon Perez was putting on a masterclass in comics art, being able to balance both not only two different styles, but something that if you were a huge fan of the past Hawkeye run, it doesn't feel jarring. It's not like going from, now I'm trying to think of, like, not like going from like Steve McNiven to, somebody else. Yeah, to Ramon Perez, exactly.
there's the first flashback pages. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 pages of it. Are sort of this painterly style that's very not sort of line based like the other stuff. And it's very loose. It's very impressionistic.
Very Ramon Perez from like where like Tales of Sand, things like that. Like, where we fell in love with Ramon.
Yeah, absolutely. When you cut to the now, my immediate impression was, oh, this looks like it has looked. It looks like Ramon Perez, but there's definitely an element of what made David Aja's work, and the color and everything. The sort of
is Matt Hollingsworth coloring?
No,
this?
He's not. I have to go to the end to get to it, but it's Ramon Perez and another name that you were going to look up while I keep going with what I was going.
Yep. Keep going.
And I really liked that, sort of that simple, very, very sparse of line, you know, cartooning that I think Perez, you know, Tale of Sand was like a, was like a shot across the bow. And I was like, he's the most exciting cartoonist that I've seen in a long time when he came out. And then, you know, he did the John Carter thing for a little while and he did a couple of Marvel things here and there, but I don't think that he's gotten a mainstream project to shine on or even another sort of like, auteur thing. Ian Herring.
Ian Herring, colorist.
So it's not Hollingsworth.
Yep. No.
And then,
but yeah, I always felt like, I've always been a huge fan of Ramon's work. I feel like there have been some projects where I don't think he's necessarily been the right fit for.
Yeah, I think that X-Men run that I was very excited about, I don't think he was the right guy for that.
Yeah, but this book, like the two between like Lemire and Perez just feel like they're completely on the same page in the kind of story that they want to tell, and if they can do this on a monthly basis, then. Hallelujah.
Well, isn't it really interesting? It occurred to me like halfway through this. I was like, wait, doesn't he do Green Arrow too?
Yep.
Wait a minute.
Well, no, he doesn't do it anymore.
Yeah, right. But up until very recently, he did it for a long time. But they're sticking with Kate and Clint. I don't know why they were there. That was a bad mission. Whoever made that call to send them in there blew it. I guess they were saying it was Maria Hill because they were cursing her. I liked this a lot, but not as much as I know that there were a couple. I don't know. It didn't quite fill in everything I wanted with it, but I thought it was really well done and really interesting. And I'm going to keep reading it because had Ramon Perez not been the artist and had it not blown me away, I would have been like, I don't really need to read this. But it definitely held.
Yeah, on. I definitely think that there is something to like the two of them together.
Yeah.
Make me want to keep reading this book. Because I read Lemire's Green Arrow when he was doing it with Andrea Sorrentino, and I liked it. I was more in it for Sorrentino's art, but
I liked it too. But I stopped reading it.
Yeah,
I mean, basically, like it was okay, but it didn't really hook me, for the most part. And you know, to be honest, he hasn't done a heck of a lot that has hooked me recently. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that is. I'm a huge fan of sort of his early work and his creator-owned stuff. But a lot of the sort of more recent stuff at DC wasn't very exciting. So this definitely has a verve to it that I think is really nice.
Are you reading The Valiant?
No, The Valiant.
You should. Yeah, I think you'd like it.
Okay.
Because he's doing it with Kint and Repella Rivera, and it's just Lemire's DC work I haven't been the biggest fan of, but some of the stuff he's been doing over at Valiant has been fantastic.
And I'm also willing to that may not be all him. that might be the case. Yep. You know, you're working in a system. We're living in a society. I'm gonna flip up the script a little bit because I realize why I put these things together in the first place, and then we can move on to Descender number one to continue this thread of books by Jeff Lemire.
Much we love Jeff Lemire.
Yeah, and I think that it's been a little while since I've been able to give him any praise, and I'm happy to do that. This is Descender number one is his creator-owned book. Debuting from Image Comics with art by Dustin Gwynn, and here's the thing: Jeff Lemire's a pretty good artist on his own. But this is a couple of hardcore, big-time, real good artists that he had books coming out with this week. So good for you, Jeff. This is like some straight-up hard sci-fi, like robot. Like this is like an offshoot of the Pluto series. This could be some Japanese stuff. And at first, before the thing, there's like a cold open. Where a thing happens and there's a giant robot and he seems to vaporize everything on Earth. I was like, I don't know if I like this very much. And then after that, I was 100% in.
So it's weird because I was just watching Total Recall because, one, I had laundry to fold and it was on Netflix.
Well, hold on. You don't need to make excuses for watching Total Recall. It's okay. Sometimes. No, I was watching Total Recall, and anybody out here is going to go, yeah, of course. Obviously.
And it was just one of those things where I realize how much I love sort of dystopian future sci-fi.
Good thing and, you read comics.
Yeah, right? But it was just so interesting to see a lot of the there were actually quite a few similarities I felt just in terms of how the world was sort of how it looked, and I love that stuff. And this book, Descender, is just full of it. But the one thing I liked about this was Nguyen's art makes what usually feels like cold and stiff and sharp warm. He made it feel warm and just super inviting. And it sounds like a crazy descriptor to say of comic book art, but it was, when I was reading it, I knew where we were, but there was just something about it that just felt warm and snuggly.
Even though it was a robot.
Even though it was a robot.
I gotta say, the kid, is it Tim? The Tim robot kid. Like, he reminded me, and this is not a bad way, but he totally reminded me of Adam from Pluto. Have you ever read Pluto?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was just like, oh, it's like that.
Yeah. You're
this super powerful robot who looks like a 9-year-old boy who you cannot help. But, I also really like the setting of the world after the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like at the beginning, they do a thing really quick, there's 5.5 billion people on this world, and then something happens and it's real bad, and then we're left with 1 billion people on the world. So that's a significant decline. It's the same thing like Pacific Rim was like that, I think. All of a sudden the world, it's the world after the world, but they're all trying to get by like it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I really love how he depicted the scientist. In the
I'm sorry. I'm still a little shell shocked that you watched Pacific Rim.
I did. I had to. Yeah. I mean, everybody seemed to really like it, so yeah. I put it on one day while I was working. it wasn't like I like made a big night of it. I'm gonna make popcorn and watch it. Although it was perfectly enjoyable. It was fine.
Oh.
Why isn't Charlie Day a big star? Sorry. I just like the aging that he had done to sort of the main scientist guy, and then he had a gut. He was his eyes were way more haggard, and he'd just kind of given up where he was so young and pretty at the beginning. It didn't look like anything. It didn't look like anything that Dustin Nguyen had done.
No.
It looked like something all new.
Yeah. And part of it too felt like some of the that all I could see in with that big giant robot guy that, laser beamed everyone to death was it felt like a celestial, right? There were some aspects of it that felt like those Kirby big ideas that I love in comics that, it was like, all right, let's do this.
Well, for me, what's funny is for me is that then there's the bit at the end which looked like it was out of a Jonathan Hickman book, which was like this long list of planets.
Right.
With all these facts about them, and I was like, I'm not going to read that. If I can't get it from context, I don't care. I was like, all right, it's fine that you know all that. You don't have to tell me. I'm fine. Only Greg Rucka can do that with me, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. See, I loved it, and I think a lot of it's because I'm a huge fan of the Mass Effect games, and to me, I ate all that stuff up. I want to know about who the different alien races are and all that stuff. Just it, to me, it's all added goodness. And
so I'm going to tell you something, and I'm curious if you'll be surprised. I've played and finished all three of those.
I'm not surprised. They're very good games.
They're very good games, but I'm not really a gamer. But those are games that I've made. But yeah. I did no extra. I don't want to know anything else. I just wanted to play it. I just needed to know my guy's thing.
Fair enough.
But I have played all those, and I see what you're saying. And I like that. See, that's the difference, I guess, is that I like that all that exists. I don't necessarily need to read all of it, but I think it's good that that's a thing. That's all there in the background, I guess.
Right.
But it feels like this was cool and really well planned. And again, it didn't – felt a lot more cohesive and interesting than, say, Trillium was, which is very experimental. I think, whereas this was a little easier to grab onto. So I'm looking forward to reading more. we have to talk about the Star Wars books when they come out, because I don't know how not to. And this week, Princess Leia number one. I'm sure that there's like the people who are listening who don't really care about Star Wars, like, oh, we're going to keep doing this? And it's, yes, yes, we are. This is a unique time in Star Wars. And this is all canon, apparently, so there we are. Mark Waid, very interesting choice on Princess Leia number one, with art by Terry Dodson, and of course, Rachel Dodson on inks, and Jordi Belair on colors.
I'm curious to why you think Mark Waid was an interesting choice for this book.
I don't think of him as like a Star Wars guy. I think of him like a superhero guy. Like, I think, oh, he's the guy who fixes Superman. Like, that's who he is. And I don't know why that I wouldn't think that would apply to Star Wars. But none of the people on the Star Wars books are people who I would think. But I don't know. It just because I think of him as a superhero guy. And I know that that's wrong. And I've read stuff of his that wasn't superhero that was good. But that was my instinct.
All right.
But have you been reading all the Star Wars books? Keeping up on things?
I have loved every one of them.
Yeah.
I will admit, though, this one out of the three books, this one is probably one I would rank number three out of them.
Probably, yes. Is that us being like, ooh, Princess Leia? Is that like our 8-year-old boy who doesn't want to play with the Princess Leia toy, or is that
no? I just to me, like my favorite one of them all is Darth Vader. I think that book is just the bee's knees.
I think you're right.
The Leia that Jason Aaron's writing, to me feels a bit closer to the Leia to the Leia that I don't know if I want or what. I thought this Leia was fine, but I felt like she was a background character in this particular first issue. There were a lot of things happening around her, mm-hmm. And not necessarily her doing anything.
But I think that's the deal. Because I mean, like, I feel like this is very intelligently gleaned from situation. Like, he's like, well, who is she? What's happening around her? And she's trying to figure out where she fits in. Is she going to be a background character? Is she going to be a princess? And what is that going to mean? And how, you know, how do other people, you know, which is a very introspective way of doing it, but I don't think it's not valid.
Yeah.
I think it was like one of the things is the sort of whether it's okay to fit these stories in between the stories. And this one literally picks up like as episode four ends. I mean, literally like mm-hmm. the last shot of that is the beginning of this. And it's where we walk backstage with them after Chewie doesn't get a medal. And I was like, here's your chance, Mark. Nope. Oh no, we've left your medal back here, Chewie. Here it is. I'm sorry. And that fixes everything. You could have done it, but you didn't. So I kind of like it, but I don't know if that feels very Star Wars. Because I don't think of Star Wars as being terribly introspective.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's part of my thing where I guess I expected more. I guess I wanted more action in it, but yeah, I think that's it. I don't necessarily think. I mean, these books are a perfect opportunity to spend more time with these characters, and you know, to get to know them more. You know, within the context of the quote unquote canon that it takes place in. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, I liked it.
I did
it
too.
Just, there was just something about it that just I wanted to like it as much as I liked the other two.
Yeah. But you know what? I didn't think it was going to feel like that, and it didn't. It's a different kind of book, and I'm kind of okay with that. I don't love Terry Dodson as a rule. I don't think it's bad. It's just it's not exactly my favorite style.
I mean, it's got it had Admiral Akbar in it, and
it did. And Admiral Akbar was kind of a dick, which as I say it out loud, I like it even more. We get to spend some time with General Dodonna. That's never been something I've done before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the sort of the politics of, oh, right, some of the people are from Alderaan and they're, you know, they're not sure. She doesn't know how to act, and, you know, she's adopted. And it's all that was kind of, it's funny that somebody called her on not sort of talking enough about her dead parents, whereas Luke's aunt and uncle were burned alive in front of him and he never mentioned them again.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. I don't know how, you know, I know you're a big Star Wars guy, but I don't know how deep your Star Wars nerddom goes. And this is going to be a sort of an unabashed plug for my website, comicbook.com. I've got a writer who does Easter eggs for all the Star Wars books. And there was one in particular that I thought was brilliant. Can you decode Oberesh, the sort of that written language of like arrows and...
I saw it.
Yeah.
But I can't decode it. I definitely noticed it because they got rid of it.
Yeah.
No, they added it. It was not in the originally.
The
it was in it, the original movies as they existed were in English or basic,
right,
as we would say in the Star Wars universe, and then they switched it to that. But I didn't. Mm-hmm. I just recognized it.
There's a scene in it where she's asking R2 for you know what R2-D2 thinks, mm-hmm. and he essentially says, "If you decode it, I've got a bad feeling about this."
Nice.
And I was like, oh, that is some great stuff.
Wow.
And it's funny because like there's little like head nods and things like that that you can tell that like either Mark Waid is a huge Star Wars fan or he's certainly done his homework.
They devoted a whole panel to that. I'm looking at it right now, so like that's completely wasted space unless you know what that says because there's nothing else going on in that panel. Two panels actually.
Right. Yep.
Interesting.
Exactly.
All right. Well done, dear guy. So you know, I'm gonna keep reading it. I wasn't like, ugh, but you know, it's like all of them. I sort of approach them trepidatiously, and I'm like, I liked some of it. Some of it I'm not sure about. It's like you know, it's like early sexual experiences. No, it's not like that. It's literally the exact opposite of that. I want to quickly touch on Nameless number 2 from Grant Morrison and Chris Burnham from Image. First one, I wasn't sure. I was like, I liked some of it. I didn't like a lot of it. I didn't understand it. I thought this one was way more. The second one was way more grounded. I knew everything was going on the whole time for the most part. And I'm at the point where I find this main character really interesting. I don't think I could put my finger on him at first. And I get the idea of the spacesuits with the sigils and like there's a whole magic thing that's going on. It's starting to feel like really strong Grant Morrison. Big step up from the first issue, basically, would be what I would say. You reading this book?
I read the first one. I haven't had the chance to read the second one, but one of the things that keeps me sort of coming back to it is I really like the creative team of Grant Morrison and Chris Burnham.
Sure.
I think that they just, you know, and it's, I think there is, it's a fantastic time in comics right now because there are so many creative teams who are just on point with one another. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, Image, you know, a lot of Image books, you know, working that way. But Grant Morrison and Chris Burnham are definitely one of those teams. Even when Grant Morrison books sometimes will go over my head, he's usually paired with, you know, such a fantastic artist that the art is enough to get me through the story and I'll understand it. And hopefully the next issue, I'll understand it a bit better. Sort of like John Hickman books in that way sometimes. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I'm definitely going to, I'm reading it. Just one of those things that just sort of didn't fit in the schedule.
Yeah. I think that Burnham is really put himself in a nice spotlight for this one too. Like there's a lot of really nice pages where, you know, I'm not going to say he fits very much in the Quitely mold. Like it's mm-hmm. definitely reminiscent of him, but he's also doing a lot of things that Quitely does.
Also a guest on Let's Talk Comics.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anyone who isn't at this point? Fairly prolific. Would have Frank Quitely? Probably not.
Not yet, but great.
Like I'm not saying like he's a Quitely clone. He's not, but he does a lot of the things that Quitely does really well, and as such, he pairs up very nicely with Morrison.
Yep.
Great. I thought it was a really nice. Really, the second issue I thought was a big step up from the first one. So I'm glad that it went in that direction. Guardians team up number one, Brian Bendis and Art Adams. I actually did read this one, but I think this is going to be more in your wheelhouse. So what did you think?
It was 20 pages of Art Adams goodness. Good God Almighty. It's your standard team up fair with the Guardians of the Galaxy, as you know. So Groot, Star-Lord, Gamora, Star Rocket, and I think Venom was in the book still, and Captain Marvel, teaming up with the newer Avengers team from Jonathan Hickman's book. But it's very, if you've only seen the movies, friendly, you know, even with some of the extra random Avengers characters. But it's pretty much Guardians are on the run from a mysterious giant ship that's staffed with the creepy Chitauri, you know, redesigned as they showed up in the Avengers movie. They crash in, you know, right down the block from Avengers Tower, and the Avengers, you know, have to help them out. And you find out that at the end, Nebula, for some reason, is going after her half-sister Gamora for some undetermined reason. But it doesn't matter, because, good God, look at that Art Adams art.
Now you're an Art Adams guy. Like, I missed him, you know, wherever I was in, because I was in comics for a while and then I was out. Like, so I had my Art Adams Wolverine poster that everybody had, but I wasn't, like, ever a huge Art Adams guy. And I gotta say, like, this was definitely kind of cool, but I didn't love it. And I noticed that, A, there's no inker. There's only a penciler and a colorist, which I thought was kind of interesting. And B,
well, Art Adams pencils so tight that if you just turn up the contrast, you've got inks.
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know. For some reason, it doesn't do anything for me. There was a couple of times where I thought there was some storytelling issues. I know. I'm not supposed to say those things.
Well, to me, I missed Art Adams. I only, found Art Adams when, you know, I got into comics in, you know, the mid 2000s. And, but there's something about his, attention to his attention to detail and the amount of detail he's able to pack in on some of those pages is just, you understand why it takes him so long to do a book.
Yeah.
Or why he only does. There's one slight criticism I have of Art Adams' work is that his faces sometimes all look the same.
Yeah. And he's got these god-awful uniforms. Just the designs across the board. I was like, oh, stop.
But he is able to draw scale and epicness like no other, I think. Like, you know, there's a scene where he makes that ship that Nebula is driving look enormous. And, like, it is not going to fit through, you know, down a tiny avenue street, you know, in Manhattan. And its wings are just tearing apart buildings. And in comparison, like, the Guardian ship looks like a net to it.
Yeah.
And there's just something about that to me just makes the book feel so much more epic, and it just for some reason it feels like an event, and it's not. It's just a team up book.
We're gonna ground the Guardians in the ground, aren't we? We're just gonna grind them right into the ground and use up every Rocket and Groot moment that we can possibly get out of these characters until you never want to see them again. That's the way I'm starting to feel. A little bit. I tried to read it and I kind of read it, but I kind of just went, oh, look at the art. I went through it that way because the story was very typical.
Well, I've been a fan of Brian's characterizations of the Guardians since he took over the book. I missed the boat on the Abnett and Lanning stuff.
That's all I can start thinking. I was like, everybody out there should be bowing to those two guys.
and I've gone back to read that stuff and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. But I really enjoy the way Sam Humphries writes Star-Lord, but you know, I think a lot of that, you know, sort of comes from both, one, the movie, and two, how Brian set it up in the comics. But it was a ton of fun. And I mean, you get the Art Adams art, and, you know, the Bendis story is just icing on the cake to me.
So this week we have a sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Scribd. Scribd is like a Netflix for comics. With a subscription, you'll get access to more than 10,000 comics from Marvel, IDW Top Shelf, Valiant, Dynamite, Archie, and more. They're the only subscription service that gives you all that variety for one monthly price. On top of that, you're going to get unlimited access to their huge library of ebooks and audiobooks. There's more than 1 million titles altogether. They're all available anytime, anywhere. So head over to scrib.com/ifanboy to start with a free month. Even more importantly, Scrib makes sure that you can find your way to the comics and books you're going to love. They've got hundreds of collections curated by their teams of editors, and as you read, they'll tailor the recommendations based on the ones that you loved or the ones that you didn't love. So go to scrib.com/ifanboy right now, and you're going to get a free month to get started. That's 30 days of unlimited reading. That is more than Hulu or Netflix if you were to get a trial there, which is kind of cool. You'll be supporting the show, and so it's a big win-win for everybody. That's scrib.com/ifanboy. Thanks for supporting the show, and that's really cool. That's a thing that we've talked about that would be cool. People said for years, it should be a Netflix for comics. It's starting, so there you go. Support it, and it'll grow.
The future is here.
Yes. Choice of distribution and consumption. Let us continue through this part. We got Spider-Woman number 5. Talk to me about it.
So Spider-Woman in her new costume with a new artist. It's Dennis Hopeless and Javier Rodriguez. And if you like what Javier Rodriguez was able to do over on Daredevil, you are going to love this book. This is just fantastic stuff. I mean, Spider-Woman launched amidst Spider-Verse, and then it also launched with Greg Land. Greg Land has his fans, Greg Land has his detractors, but I feel like it's almost unfair that this book is starting with number 5 and not a new number 1, because it feels like a completely different direction for the book. Spider-Woman's new costume is great, and
Was Hopeless the writer all along?
Hopeless is the writer all along. Okay. And the story's been fantastic. I think initially when it got saddled with some of the Spider-Verse stuff, it made it a little harder to sort of get into, which is why I said I feel like this issue fully deserved a new number 1. And Marvel's not a stranger to doing that. They could have done it.
Yeah.
But I'm
going to check this out. That was what you've told me was enough to make me want to know more. I just wanted to tip my cap to Charles Soule and Jesus Saiz on Swamp Thing with number 40. I'm famous for this. I think it's his last issue. it was all about ending. And Soule went kind of nuts with this one. It was a lot of stuff that happened, but he put this big sort of background allegory to telling a story in the background. And at one point, Swamp Thing fuses with some paper because paper is made from trees, and he ends up in this story world. And I was like, holy shit, you went all Grant Morrison on that. I was like, it's my last issue. I'm going to go crazy with it. But it's been a big
story. I'm going to miss this book.
Yeah. I've liked it. I've kept coming back the whole time, and they built a thing up, and it didn't get tiresome like too many Ring Lantern people. It was good, and it was one big cohesive story. Stuff from the beginning, was in at the end, so it was all nothing happened for no reason. I dug that. I don't know that I have anything to say about Saga 26 other than at the end I was like, damn it, that book is good.
Give me more Seal.
Yeah,
I love that guy.
Yeah, but even so, there's some stuff that really happened. Brian Vaughn is the master of the last page.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll break your heart. Brian Vaughn will break your heart. That's what he'll do. More than anyone.
Yeah.
And he did.
It's funny now. It's funny. I feel like I've been on the show every time an issue of Saga has come out. And they don't come out that often, so it's weird. But anyway, this book is just one of those. I finally understand when you guys are talking about a book that's always been consistently so good. It's like, what the hell else do you say more about this book? It's good. If you're not reading it, Jesus Christ, start reading it.
But I made a joke on Twitter. No one's like, oh, what a disappointing issue of Saga. It doesn't happen. Like a disappointing issue of Saga is a 4.5 out of 5. That was kind of only excellent. but it was so good. Even though I don't have anything to say, I have to mention it. But he totally broke my heart. I want to do a Vertigo check-in. The Names, number 7. There's 9 issues in this miniseries. Any chance you're reading this one?
I am not.
Okay. This is Leandro Fernandez on art and Peter Milligan on the story. And it's a weird story. And I just about dropped it. And then I was like, oh, there's two issues left, three issues left. I'll finish it off. And so they're having to wind it up and explain things. And thankfully, I can say that like I was like, oh, okay, I think I understand this. It's strange, but it's really pretty to look at. And I like watching him work his way through it. And I like these kinds of things that I like that there's some life left in Vertigo. Because I'm not ready to give up on it yet. I also read Wolf Moon this which I've been reading, and it's good. And there's a really nice sort of twist at the end of this issue, and there's a couple of it's a bunch of trains coming together all at the same time, and it's going to collide, and it's just such a strange, it's a strange little world they've come up with. If you're not reading at this point, you won't understand, and if you are, you'll know what I'm talking about. So I'll just, that's as vague as I'll be. Tell you what. I'm going to give you – I can't talk this whole time. So why don't you tell people one way that they can support the show? We'll see how you do with it.
All right. I'm going to try not to screw this up.
Okay.
iFanboy.com/Amazon. Don't go to Amazon.com. Go to iFanboy.com/Amazon to do any of your Amazon shopping, because anything that you buy on Amazon – you know, if you're going to do a big screen TV, maybe, or you're in the market, or you're going to buy a mattress. I just bought a mattress recently.
From Amazon?
And from Amazon, it came rolled up in a box, and it is the best mattress I've ever slept on.
Wow.
So, you know, so go to ifanboy.com.
Did you pick it based on Amazon reviews?
I picked it based on Amazon reviews. Yep. And which is how I pick everything. My wife is pregnant, picked up a body pillow, and I picked it up because the reviews were essentially, this will save your marriage. I said, well, my marriage doesn't need saving, but it's good to have extra insurance.
You don't know. You don't know.
So
what I'm saying, though, is I'm going to go for the big fish. You're working at a company. You're the guy who's in charge of buying stuff. You got the purchasing power. Make that the shortcut. Get that link on there. So when you got to make a big enterprise purchase, then you know. I'm just saying, that's something.
Anything I can do to help you guys out.
All right, good work. You can also go to ifanboy.com/registration to more directly contribute. Should you want to, you can make cash donations to the show in any amount you want, or you can sign up for a regular contribution of $3 a month or just $30 a year. That is a person who does that. Well, you're going to get a foot rub. I in no way mean that literally, but I feel like you should get a foot rub, and I just don't want to touch your feet. But no, thank you very much for everybody who does that and who kicks in any way they can. You guys help keep this going, definitely, and we always appreciate it. Let us go through some questions here. Connor normally keeps time, so I think we're doing okay, but I am not the best timekeeper. I fill time. That's what I do. He keeps time. I fill time. You want to read this first question? Interesting that you're here for this.
Great. All right. This first question comes from Tim B. From The Great Unknown. You guys don't put locations in this, do you?
They don't always give them to
you. Just... Oh, that's,
if they don't
that's
give it to me, I can't write it.
I want to do like a good Larry King, like Tim B. from Kalamazoo, Arkansas or something. Whatever. Anyway. He says, you must hear from and run into comics industry types you talk to on the show. Feel free to keep it anonymous, but I would love to hear about any awkward, bizarre, or downright hostile reactions you've encountered from creators or even companies based on your work with iFanboy. Keep up the fantastic work. That's not fair.
Well, yeah, no. Okay, I'm gonna say a thing. Now, you've worked on different sides of this. You've worked for the publishers, so you have a different... I'm sure you know all sorts of stuff you'll never be allowed to talk about, and we're all the poorer for it. It's fine, though. And I thought about this, and I'm going to give you a really sort of uninteresting fact, is that 95% or more of the interactions that I have had with creators have been overwhelmingly positive.
Mm-hmm.
My interactions with comics professionals have been probably my favorite part of this entire thing. They're among the most interesting, witty, intelligent, funny people, and I'm continually amazed. I mean, like, I meet people who I don't even like their work as much as I like them. I got dozens of those guys. And then, you know, there's guys whose work I like a lot, and they, you know, they're not, but, you know, like, I don't have, like, a repository of horrible experiences. There's guys who, you know, we would go to shows. There's guys who would tell us, really, like, big guys. And it's always touching. It still is, to, like, a really guy who I think is important to comics will tell you, I really like what you're doing. And then you're like, you want to be on the show? And they're like, nope. Like, that's like that's almost the weirdest it got. Like, there are, like, artists who like, no, I'm not going to go on camera. I don't want to do that. I don't want to get on tape. Yeah. I don't want to do any of that. But, you know, like, they took time to say hi and do whatever. There are guys who are really interesting, and they suck on tape for whatever reason. Yeah. I mean, like, what have you found? You must have.
I mean, I sort of the same way where, you know, the only thing that is could be considered, quote unquote, disappointing is, you know, someone who I thought I would be able to have a conversation with, I found out that maybe not. But it's not a bad thing. It's just one of those things where, you know, maybe I caught that person on a bad day, or and you give them the benefit of the doubt. But like I was saying, one of the things I love about working in comics are the people in comics.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, you know, I'm sure that, you know, everyone has, you know, there are crazies out there, and, sure, you know, and you see them, right? Like, you don't necessarily, you know, have to have the personal crazy interaction with them. Like, they do just fine on their own. But yeah, Noah's thing, like, comics is so filled with such great people who all care about comics that, you know, even people who I will meet for the first time who, you know, is a creator working on a book, that love of comics is just something that is in common with everyone that you can then figure out how to have a, you know, a different conversation.
Well, I mean, the thing I've always said is that if you're working in comics, if you're talented enough to make it in comics, you could be making a lot more money doing almost anything else with that talent and with that drive. And in it, be, you know, not even making more money, you could be living an easier life. It's hard to be a comics creator full time. Like, it's a lot of work. And the rewards are, you know, sometimes they're very good, but more often than not, it's a lot of work. Let me see if I got. All right, I got one story. I got. It's not even like it's like a Facebook thing. A friend of mine who's a pro had said something about, you know, his wife who has like a real job, and I made a joke that one of the things, and I totally believe this to be true, by the way, one of the best things you can have as a comic book creator is a spouse with a steady job and insurance. And this one guy who's sort of, I didn't really know him, like, I'd seen his name, he's just sort of one of those artists, like, got really mad at me. And then, like, other artists got mad at me because of it. Guys who were friends of mine, they were like, no, you can support a family. And I was like, okay, it's easier if you don't. So I had to apologize, and it was a whole thing. And I was like, so you never know. That's the only thing that's happened in a while. Besides, it's
the
hard.
The only weird thing I can think of is there's someone in particular who, no matter what, has given quite possibly the same interview for maybe 2 years now. Like, no matter what the questions are, no matter what questions get asked, the same answers pop up, and it's, I am mystified by how he's able to do that. But that's it. That's all.
Yeah, yeah. I remember the time that we interviewed, I think I've said this on here, but we interviewed Mark Bagley, and he was like, I'll do it, but as long as I don't have to stop drawing, which I thought was so perfect. So, like, we did the video interview with him, and he never stopped drawing or looked up the entire time, which is difficult. I mean, well, you've all seen, like, it's funny because we haven't done video interviews in a while, so those are really the ones that would happen on. I haven't done any interviews for a while because we cut back, as you may or may not know. I remember that, like, every interview I ever did with James Robinson was incredibly awkward, and I thought, he really doesn't like me. But that's not the case. Like, it was just kind of awkward. And then I was like, and I did it 3 times. I kept going back. I was like, this time it'll be perfect because I love James Robinson and I love his work. But we were not meant to do interviews on camera with each other. So, yes. But that's cool. It's fine.
Yeah.
A lot of times the things that make somebody a fantastic artist, not necessarily the thing that make them the best person to be interviewed. So that's a thing. I don't have any hostile reactions, though. I can't say anything that has never happened.
Yeah.
So there, maybe that's not what you were looking for, but you even got a couple of names, so that's something.
Yeah.
I'm going to skip to this last one because it's so damn charming. Caleb H. of North Wales writes, Dear iFanboy, my dad listens to your show, and he said I should send this in. Caleb's 8. Today in my school, we had a lesson all about comic books. They taught us about shouting, whispering, pauses, thinking, direction, timing, sound effects, movement, and panels. Next week, I can make my own comic about Super Mario Smash Brothers. Do you think schools should teach more about comics? Well, we're a biased audience. What do you think, Jim?
That's a lot. That's a lot of learning about comics. For...
It is. I got so excited reading that. I was like, oh my God, they're teaching them about lettering.
I mean, because there's things there that I still don't fully understand. I mean, obviously the answer is yes.
Yes.
It's actually funny. I mean, he's far away off from this, but there were a few courses offered at the college I went to, you know, about comics where, you know, as a final, I got to turn in like a script.
That's amazing.
Which is kind of exciting. But yeah, no, I mean, if you, you know, just even looking, I mean, there are a number of ways you can approach this, right? There's like, you know, comics can be used at an elementary and middle school level. It could be used in a high school level, and it could be used on a university level. I think comics are created on, have so many layers that, you know, can be explored and taken apart, almost like Legos, right? And people of all ages enjoy Legos. And I feel like comics sort of work the same way in approaching, one, how they get made, why there's an important, you know, why it's important from an art standpoint and a culture standpoint that, yeah, I mean, good on you, Caleb.
Well, yeah, I think that's interesting is that a lot of times for years people have been asking about, like, should they use comics in school? But it's always... should we use comics to teach things that we would have taught with other methods? So, mm-hmm. like, instead of reading a textbook or instead of watching a movie, should you read a comic? You know, if you want to teach about the Holocaust, you show Mouse.
Right.
Yeah. This is not that. This is the language, semantics, and techniques of comics, which is really interesting. And my immediate answer is yes, because it's another storytelling art form. And if you're telling people how to tell one kind of story or another... But at 8, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Because you don't teach, you know, they don't teach movies, you know, like at 8. Mm-hmm. They don't teach, you know, how a novel works necessarily. They sort of read the stuff and you pick it up and then later, you know, you might be taught a little more about how that goes. But I love it. I think so many kids teach themselves to read using comics. My son, who's 5, he got some Lego Batman toys, and one of them came with a Lego Batman comic in it, but there's no words, just like the video games.
Huh.
So the whole thing is sequential art. Mm-hmm. And so that's cool. Asked me, could I read it to him? And I was like, no, because, you know, I don't care. The thing was that I saw that it had no words, and I thought, because he can't read yet. He can start to, but, you know, like, I was like, you can read this on your own. There's no words. All you have to do is follow the pictures. And there's something wonderful about that. There's something great about that. And when you're talking about that, right away, I love shouting, whispering, pauses, like talking about like what the words look like and mm-hmm. what that means they sound like. I think that's great stuff to teach kids. I think that it greatly contributes to literacy, to, you know, the way that you take in anything else, whether it's novels or cinema or whichever. It's great. You should totally do that. Panels, how, you know, how they move.
Sound effects.
Yeah. It's so good. You know, and that's also creative. Mm-hmm. It's like everything can just sort of like kids are great with that stuff. You know, like draw the pic. You can make, once they can make their own comics, they can start storytelling even earlier than like say that they could write, you know, paragraphs of something. So yeah, go for it. That's rad. Good luck with your comic, Caleb.
one of the best sound effect creators in this business is Fred Van Lente. His books always have the most creative sound effects, and they're fantastic.
I am all about the sound effects on the board now. And it's no disrespect to my lettering friends, mm-hmm. but when sound effects are drawn into the art,
oh yeah,
that does it for me, man. That's the greatest. Which brings me to a point about Descender, is that I don't like it when they use too many different weird fonts.
Oh, yeah.
I hate that.
Oh, that was something I was going to say. That was the only thing that really bothered me was that there were like different fonts. And
they were different sized, so that makes it harder to read for some reason. There's a letter I like very much, but he has a font that gets used sometimes that I really hate. And it's like supposed to be like, I don't know, Norse or, you know, some sort of ancient sort of language font. And I don't think it's necessary. Just do it. But to each their own. I got to talk about lettering. I love to talk about lettering. I used to make fun of people years ago. I was like, you talk about lettering. I totally love it. It's like the secret language of comics. And you're teaching it to 8-year-olds in Wales. That's the best. You can email us at contact@ifanboy. You can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from. Try to keep it around 30 seconds. We teased the thing about WonderCon. Details are going to come up about that coming forward, which is going to be a really good story about comic creators we had dealings with. Jim, what's going on in your world?
So you're teasing something 2 weeks in a row?
I don't have the details yet, so I can't. The last week we weren't sure it was going to happen. Now I know it's going to happen, but I can't say what it is yet.
Keeping them on their toes.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
I got a few things going on, you know.
Yeah.
Let's Talk Comics has gone to a bi-weekly schedule because, well, I'm having a baby and moving into a house. So that takes up a lot of time. So
I really don't want to be one of those guys, but my mind is like, you have no idea yet, dude.
Yeah. Nope. I know. But it gives me a bit more time to, one, not have to necessarily worry and have some longer conversations with some folks. I have some great guests lined up. I've had a bunch of part ones with a number of people who I've been dying to get back for part twos, like Mike Mignola, Jim Valentino. We just scratched the surface with Jim Valentino, and that guy is someone who is responsible for so many gigantic names in comics today that like he does not get nearly the amount of credit I think that man deserves.
I feel the same way about Bob Schreck.
Mm.
Bob Schreck's the same way when you sort of tie him into all of the people in comics. Not to take away from Valentino, absolutely, but it's like the same kind of deal.
Yeah. So they will all be coming back with some new faces. And that's keep trucking every other Monday at www.letstalkcomics.com. And then, of course, if you need a fix, a comics news fix, geek news fix, head on over to comicbook.com. Because it is, it's where you get that kind of stuff.
It's keeping you busy then.
It's keeping me busy.
You know. How long did you keep up one a week?
A year. I did it. That was my goal. I wanted to do it, at least do it for a full year.
That's great. That's fantastic. Yep. Yeah, no, I absolutely recommend your show. It's the show that I really never had time to do, but always wanted to. So, so good work with that. And then if you haven't gone back and listened, there's a treasure trove of stuff that you can listen to. Or you could just listen to Gabe Hartman's show over and over again.
Wasn't that one great?
It was like a special present. My question like what's the greatest experience you've had with comic creators? Anytime I got to talk to Gabe.
Yeah.
And they hired me, this kid, 17 years old, guard the MoMA or whatever it was. Oh God, it was so good. I don't know that you can ask for a better endorsement, but I'm saying I just play that on a loop. It's good times. So you can go over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show. You can talk about this week's books. You can find out about all the other podcasts we've got going on. You can follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy or at ifanboy on Twitter. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan or C.S. Kilpatrick. And are you J. Viscardi?
Jim Viscardi.
Jim Viscardi. Okay.
Yep.
I just see the name. I don't know. Yeah. We're all friends here. Want to handle the next bit?
Yeah, sure. And look, if you love this show, there is a great way to support the show by writing a review over on the iTunes. Or, you know what? Tell your friends. Introduce your mom to podcasts and help spread the iFanboy love.
Well, there you go. Thank you for valiantly filling in and mentioning Valiant while we were there. So that was good. That worked, too.
There we go.
I hope you had fun. And I hope that nobody at home has any idea about the technical difficulties that we just had to deal with.
It's fine. And I sort of got the pick of the week, so I'm going to take that as a win.
Yeah, it's awesome. I was so glad. I was like, I'm totally going to be talking about this by myself. I was just preparing, so that was super pleasing. That's good. All right, well, thanks, man.
No, thank you.
So I'm supposed to say my name, see, because I'm Josh.
And I'm Jim.
There we go. See you next week.